Part 1, Chapter 17, Gateway. Increased size affects group life in a number of ways. There is evidence that larger groups, 5 or 6 members, are more productive than smaller groups, 2 or 3 members. Members of larger groups tend to offer more suggestions than members of smaller groups. And although they seem to reach less agreement, they also show less tension. These differences may reflect the greater need of larger groups to solve organizational problems. Members may realize that their behavior must become more goal-directed, since it is unlikely that they can coordinate their actions without making a special effort to do so. Larger groups also put more pressure on their members to conform. In such groups, it is harder for everyone to take part equally in discussions or to have the same amount of influence on decisions. There is evidence that groups with an even number of members differ from groups with an odd number of members. The former disagree more than the latter and suffer more deadlocks as a result. Groups with an even number of members may split into halves. This is impossible in groups with an odd number of members. One side always has a numerical advantage. According to some researchers, the number 5 has special significance. Groups of this size usually escape the problems we have just outlined. Moreover, they are not plagued by the fragility and tensions found in groups of 2 or 3. Groups of 5 rate high in member satisfaction. Because of the odd number of members, deadlocks are unlikely when disagreements occur. Exercises 1 and 2. Some people make few intentional changes in life. Sure, over time, they may get fatter and flabbier, get lines, and go gray. But they wear their hair the same way, buy the same brand of shoes, eat the same breakfast, and stick to routines for no reason other than the ease of a comfortable, predictable life. Yet, as both research and real life show, many others do make important changes. They train for marathons, quit smoking, switch fields, write plays, take up the guitar, or learn to tango, even if they never danced before in their lives. What is the difference between these two groups of people? Their perspective. People who change do not question whether change is possible or look for reasons they cannot change. They simply decide on a change they want and do what is necessary to accomplish it. Changing, which always stems from a firm decision, becomes job number 1. When people do not change, the reason is not that change isn't possible. It's that they put the brakes on change or limit their possibilities by presuming they cannot change and looking for reasons to prove it. Of course, there are things you can't change. You can't alter when and where you were born. You can't do anything but complain about the weather. You cannot fly no matter how hard you flap your arms. But often you think you cannot do something simply because you have never done it before. Exercises 3 and 4. We say we know something when we have acceptable reasons or proof for what we claim. I can say that I know that my computer is sitting in front of me because I can see it. I also know that the great English humanist Sir Thomas More died in 1535 because I've done research on More for years, and that is what the historical records show. I even know that the sum of the interior angles of every triangle that ever has existed, or ever will exist, is 180 degrees. Have I measured them all? Not very likely. How do I know? Because this is, in fact, the definition of a triangle. Each of these 3 examples involves knowledge, but each example is different. I claim to know something in each case, but the reasons I give keep changing. My first claim is based on direct sense experience. The second involves second-hand evidence, or hearsay, ultimately based on someone else's first-hand experience. And the third doesn't rely on sense experience at all. If they're all so different, Do all these examples involve knowledge? The same kind of knowledge? As you see, questions about knowledge can be quite complicated. Exercises 5 and 6. Americans who follow swimming had high hopes for Matt Biondi, a member of the U.S. Olympic team in 1988. Some sports writers were touting Biondi is likely to match Mark Spitz's 1972 feat of taking 7 gold medals. But Biondi finished a heartbreaking third in his first event, the 200-meter freestyle. In his next event, the 100-meter butterfly, Biondi was inched out for the gold by another swimmer who made a greater effort in the last meter. Sportscasters speculated that the defeats would discourage Biondi in his successive events. But Biondi sprang from defeat and took a gold medal in his next 5 events. One viewer who was not surprised by Biondi's recovery was Martin Seligman, a psychologist at the University of Pennsylvania, who had tested Biondi for optimism earlier that year. In an experiment done with Seligman, the swimming coach told Biondi during a special event for the public viewing of Biondi's best performance that he had a worse time than was actually the case. Despite the disappointing feedback, when Biondi was asked to rest and try again, his performance, actually already very good, was even better. But when other team members who were given a false bad time and whose test scores showed they were pessimistic tried again, they did even worse the second time. Exercises 7 and 8. A lot of popular writing on traditional diets implies that the foods that go into them have been carefully chosen over the years to promote good health. That's not the whole story. People eat what they can grow, gather, kill, or buy, and their choices are affected by weather, soil, economics, and even politics. Given these restrictions, various cultures have developed many different combinations of healthy foods. Keep in mind, however, that virtually all of these choices were for short-term health, not for living a full life into old age. Also keep in mind that diets that seem to be good for people whose days are full of hard physical labor aren't necessarily good for people who slave at a desk all day. In Northern Europe, for example, the short growing season makes it difficult to eat fruits and vegetables year-round. It is, though, a fine climate for raising livestock, and meat and dairy products made a good match for the energy needs of people who had to survive long, cold winters. In the small island nation of Japan, the main components of the diet are fish, naturally, and rice, a plant that can yield large amounts of grain from small plots of land. In both cases, the traditional diet kept people healthy for long enough to reproduce and raise children, and also to develop complex societies. Yet, their successes don't imply that either of these diets would yield the best health for contemporary people, whose main occupation involves sitting for most of the day.